Our reading this evening is Matthew chapter 5, and we'll read the first 16 verses. Let's hear the word of God. Speaking of the Lord Jesus, we read, "Now when he saw the crowds, he went up on a mountainside and sat down. His disciples came to him, and he began to teach them, saying, 'Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called sons of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven. For in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you. You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled by men. You are the light of the world. A city on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before men, that they may see your good deeds and praise your Father in heaven." We thank God for his word. Our text this evening is Matthew chapter 5 and verses 10 to 12. Let's hear them again. "Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven. For in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you." So reads the word of God, and from part of the Sermon on the Mount, as the Lord Jesus completes his description of the Christian's character. And he completes it with a startling pronouncement of blessing. If we haven't already been shocked by everything that he said before this point, we certainly will be shocked by this. Imagine those who were there on that mountainside when Jesus took them up and began to teach his disciples. Imagine the shock of hearing these things for the first time. Part of the problem of being a Christian, it's a nice problem to have, but part of the problem is that we become very familiar with the Bible. I hope you're familiar with the Beatitudes, but the difficulty with becoming familiar with something is that it doesn't shock you anymore. We ought to be shocked when Jesus says, "Blessed are those who mourn, blessed are the meek, blessed are the merciful," because it cuts right against our natural instincts to be like that. But certainly when he gets to this last beatitude and talks about it being a blessed thing when people are persecuted, and when he then goes on to push home the truth even further and says when you're insulted and when you are slandered, and when you are physically persecuted, that not only is this a blessing, but you are to rejoice in it. It really does shock. Jesus first of all states the beatitude in verse 10, and then he extends it with a very personal explanation in verses 11 and 12. It's very detailed, more detailed than any of the other beatitudes, and it's full of encouragement for us. What is he saying? Well, Jesus is saying that what he's describing here, persecution, is the normal outcome of a Christian life that is lived according to the seven qualities that he has already outlined in verses 3 to 9. It's the normal outcome. This is what is to be expected if you live your life as a Christian. It causes us to ask some questions, I think, doesn't it? The first question is, why would people want to persecute Christians? Why would they want to do that? In 1992, Billy Graham was invited to visit China and then North Korea. And he spoke to both presidents. And what he assured them is that Christians are their best citizens. You might, well, China and North Korea aren't that much different today to what they were then. North Korea seems to be a little more open to the West, but there are diplomatic and political reasons for that. But Christians are badly persecuted in North Korea. It's always top of the list of places in the world where Christians are persecuted. Many of them are kept in, well, what we would know as concentration camps and fed very little and very badly, badly treated. Christianity is banned in North Korea. The Bible is banned in North Korea. Worship of the emperor is what is really encouraged, demanded. In China as well, although things have relaxed a little in recent years, there are still reports that Christians are being sent to concentration camps. They don't call them that, of course, but that's essentially what they are. Billy Graham was right. Christians are the best citizens. So why do they get persecuted so badly? Surely, if you exhibit the qualities that Jesus highlights here, being poor in spirit, mourning for your own sins, being meek, being hungry for righteousness, being merciful, being pure in heart, and being peacemakers, surely you might think that that would be attractive to the world. Won't the world look at those people and say, that's what we want to be like? Those are the sort of people that we need more of. If only everybody would be like that. Now you see, this is where we can expose a complete fallacy. Because there are many people who are not Christians who say, I like the Sermon on the Mount. I've heard people say this, you've heard them as well, I'm sure. I love the Sermon on the Mount, they say. I'm not too keen on lots of other bits of the Bible, but the Sermon on the Mount is wonderful. And then they go on to say this, if only people would live like that, the world would be a wonderful place. Now we can expose that as utter folly, because when people do live like this, Jesus says they get persecuted. They don't get welcomed with open arms, they get persecuted. Why is that? Well, superficially, Christians are attractive to the world for a little while. The ungodly world feels quite kindly disposed towards Christians until they meet a real one. And then it's quite different. You probably found that yourself, that when you first meet people and you're introduced to them and the subject comes up and in some way or other you're able to tell them you're Christian, they'll be quite kindly disposed toward you. Oh, that's really good. I'm very pleased for you. I'm glad you've got some faith. That's really good. They even go as far as to say, I wish I had the sort of faith that you have. But then after a while, when they get to know you a bit better, the relationship can change. What does the Bible say? Well, John 3, verse 20. Everyone who does evil hates the light and will not come into the light for fear that his deeds will be exposed. The problem with being a Christian is that you are the light of the world. And people don't like to come into that light because it then exposes the darkness in their hearts. You might have experienced that before you became a Christian. You got to know Christians, but you found them very uncomfortable to be around. Because every time you spoke to them, they made you feel uncomfortable. Not because they deliberately did, but simply because the light of God is shining into your heart and exposing your deeds. And many of us experienced that before we became Christians. John 7, verse 7, Jesus is having a conversation with his brothers. Now, his brothers didn't believe in him at this point. And they're trying to urge Jesus to go up to the Jerusalem, to the feast. And he said, he's not going, not yet. And this is what Jesus says to his brothers. John 7, verse 7. The world cannot hate you, but it hates me, because I testify that what it does is evil. You want to think of an example of that? Think of John the Baptist. John the Baptist, Herod, was really quite keen on John the Baptist. He admired him until the point that John the Baptist said, it's wrong for you to have your brother's wife. At that point, Herod started to dislike John enough to put him in prison. And Herodias, his lover, she hated John the Baptist. And it's for that reason, you see, because evil in the human heart is exposed when a Christian says or shows that it's wrong. John 15, verse 19, Jesus says, if you belong to the world, it would love you as its own. As it is, you do not belong to the world, but I have chosen you out of the world. That is why the world hates you. Strong language, isn't it? The world hates you. The truth is that the world really does hate Christians. Now, 2 Chronicles 18, verse 7, the king of Israel, now he should have been someone who loved the Lord, but he didn't. He was Ahab, wicked man. Jehoshaphat comes to see Ahab. And they're going to join together in a battle, and they want to inquire of the Lord first. So Jehoshaphat says to King Ahab, well, is there any prophet of the Lord here? And this is what Ahab replies. There is still one man through whom we can inquire of the Lord, but I hate him because he never prophesies anything good about me, but always bad. So I think we have to say that in general, the world hates Christ and therefore hates his disciples, because Christians are so different in character to the world. We don't actually belong in the world. We don't fit in. And because of that, the world hates the Christian. And in particular, if you think about these seven characteristics, these seven beatitudes, you find that they do fly in the face of the world's values and principles. Jesus says, blessed are the poor in spirit. But poverty of spirit flies in the face of the pride that is in men's hearts. When a Christian comes along and says, well, as far as I'm concerned before God, I've got nothing to offer him. And the world says, don't be silly. That's ridiculous. You've got lots. You're a reasonable person. You're a good living person. We say, no, I'm bankrupt spiritually, and I need God to fill my heart. And that cuts right across the idea of pride. We say, well, I mourn my sins. I'm aware of my deficiencies before God. Blessed are those who mourn. That runs counter to the callous, indifferent, self-satisfied world. Because the world says, you don't have to be like that. You don't have to constantly be putting yourself down all the time. Think about yourself. And there's an indifference and a callousness. Jesus says, blessed are the meek. A meek and quiet spirit that accepts wrong without complaint. Well, that's just seen by the world as being weak
and stupid, because the world says, we've got no time for weak people. You don't have to be like that. They confuse meekness with weakness, of course. We say, well, I'm desiring spiritual things. The blessings that I'm really looking for in life are the spiritual blessings from God, not the material blessings. I'm hungering and thirsting after righteousness. And it exposes the world's lust after things, after money and power and sensual gratification. The Christian says, well, God would have me be merciful in my actions. And the world says, why be like that? Why not be like everybody else? Selfish and wanting your way and things for you. The me culture really does get exposed by merciful people. And purity of heart, well, that exposes the hypocrisy of the painted on sham morality of the world. As for those who want to be peacemakers, well, we live in a contentious world, don't we? Where actually people seem to be more concerned with carrying quarrels on than trying to resolve them. So Jesus says persecution is inevitable, because if you live like this, you're going to clash with a world that is clearly not like that. Persecution is inevitable. Jesus says, blessed are you when people insult you. It doesn't say blessed are you if people insult you. It's inevitable that it will happen. And why? Well, he says, for righteousness. Verse 10, blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, because of the righteousness of God, because of the right way of living, that they're seeking to please God. He says, blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me, because of Jesus, because of our love for Jesus, because of his place in our hearts and lives. I need to say here, of course, that there are some times when Christians suffer, not because of righteousness and not because of their love for Jesus, but simply because of their own stupidity. And we've all done that. There are times when we are sinful. There are times when we act stupidly. There are sometimes when we do things that we should never really have done. And we may be overzealous in certain areas, and we're ending up inviting persecution. And we should be careful of that. Jesus is not talking about that. We need to be careful as Christians that when we are persecuted, it is simply because we're Christians and not through any wrongdoing in ourselves. And we should never invite persecution either. Remember that Paul, the Apostle Paul, was lowered over the wall in a basket to escape from Damascus, because people were trying to kill him. He didn't stay in Damascus and say, well, you know, I'm a Christian and I should expect this persecution. No, if you can escape it, then escape it. But not if it means compromising your faith. Paul was prepared to be very humble and meek and climb inside a basket and be let down the wall of Damascus in order to escape persecution. But there will inevitably be times when we are persecuted. So there's a first question. Why would the world want to persecute Christians? The answer is because Christians expose what the world is like. Christians remind the world of their sin. And Christians seek to live in a way that is totally opposed to the way that sinful nature would take us. So let's ask another question. What form does this persecution take, and how should we respond to it? You might be familiar with the organization Open Doors. Open Doors is an organization that seeks to support and encourage and inform people about the persecuted church. Open Doors has someone they call a pastor at large, and he visits countries that are or may well experience persecution in the near future. And what he does is he runs courses and preaching meetings and opens up the Bible and helps them to know how to respond and what to expect. And they call these meetings Standing Firm in the Storm, wanting to try to encourage Christians that being a Christian means you will be persecuted, and for them not to think of it as something really strange and odd that's happening to them, and not for them to think that somehow they've gone wrong, because the great temptation is to start changing what you believe and how you behave in order to avoid that persecution. And Open Doors says, well, we're not to do that. We are to stand firm whilst we're expecting this to happen. So how do we do that? Well, we need to understand what sort of things we can expect. And Jesus begins with the lowest form of persecution, but it's one that every one of us will have experienced if we're Christians. The first thing he says is that people will insult you. Verse 11, blessed are you when people insult you. Jesus endured insults, didn't he, of men. The blind man in John chapter 9, when they took him before the Sanhedrin, they insulted him. They called him all sorts of terrible names. He had to endure that. Ridicule. Name calling. Well, at its basic level, every Christian has experienced something of that. Excuse me. Even the young children experience that perhaps more than anyone else. When they become Christians and when they begin to tell their friends and at school, there's all sorts of name-calling and ridicule that goes on and insults that you get from others. You may even find that it comes from members of your own family because they hate what you've become because you're a Christian. And Jesus says, well, that's what you can expect. That is, in one sense, the lowest form of persecution, but it's perhaps even harder to bear than physical persecution. And then the next thing that Jesus talks about is slander. Well, it's not the next in list, but slander. He talks about people falsely saying all kinds of evil against us because of him. All kinds of false things being said about Christians. And again, we find that, and we do live in a culture that rather enjoys accusing people of things. And so Christians often do get accused of things that they've never done. And this is something that I think will probably increase as our society gets further and further away from Christ. The early Christians, believe it or not, were called atheists. We use that word atheist to describe someone who doesn't believe in any God, doesn't worship any God. But the early Christians were called atheists simply because they didn't worship a visible God. Everybody else was worshiping their idols, and the Christians worshiped a God that you couldn't see. And so they were called atheists. Christians were also called immoral because they would frequently meet in secret places. They would call one another brother and sisters, they would greet one another with a holy kiss, and so all sorts of false accusations were spread abroad because of Christians, and they were called immoral. Early Christians were called cannibals because they ate the flesh and the blood of Jesus. And they were called unpatriotic because they confessed their loyalty to Christ as the king and refused to worship the emperor. And the same thing would happen in somewhere like North Korea, of course, because a Christian would refuse to worship the emperor. Well, today, Christians do face that sort of thing in various forms, the slander and the false accusations. So why? Well, think about the fact that Christians seek to live honest lives. And so at school and at work, in all of our dealings with authorities, the Christian seeks to be as honest as they possibly can be. When we fill forms in, we want to make sure that the answers are true. We want to make sure that we work a full day for our employer. We don't want to cheat on our expenses or to mislead in any way. The Christian seeks to be honest. But very often because of that, the Christian gets accused of being dishonest. Sunday. A Christian refuses to work unnecessarily on a Sunday because we consider it to be the Lord's Day and we want to meet together and we don't want to please ourselves on this day. We want to seek to please the the Lord. And we can be made fun of, and our families can accuse us very often of not wanting to spend any time with them because we're always up that church. And we think more of the church than we do of them. And we have to say, yeah, we do. Family, again, when loyalty to Christ supersedes our loyalty to our husband or our wife or our children. Again, it can result in friction at the very least, and it certainly can result in much argument and rejection. And the entertainments that we enjoy, we don't indulge in many of the things that the world would consider to be quite normal practices. And why don't you want to join in with us? Because, you know, you're just being standoffish, aren't you? And you're being holier than thou. We say, well, no, I don't do that. That's not what I want to do. And you get invited to the staff Christmas party. And everybody is drinking. And you say, well, I'm not going to join in with that. I don't get drunk. The Bible tells me that I'm not to get drunk. And then, so you leave as early as you possibly can, and then people say, well, where are you going then? You know, you just don't like fun, do you? And you think we're all wrong. And no, it's just not, I don't do that. And it can make life very difficult. And this is exactly what Jesus is speaking about here. He's not just talking about being put in prison. In some ways, that's easier. It really is easier to face physical forms of punishment and restriction than it is to be constantly got at because you're a Christian. But Jesus says, that's what you can expect because you love me. He says, that's what I got, and that's what you'll get too. You see, the Christian just does not fit in. And we will be an irritant, even though we don't want to be. We'll be an irritant to people in the world. We'll be like that little tiny stone that gets in your shoe. And you know what it's like. Even though it's a tiny, tiny thing, it's really annoying. And it's very, very painful. And you've just got to get rid of it. And that's how the world feels towards a Christian. But then Jesus moves on to the highest form of persecution. He uses the word persecute. That word means to pursue someone in order to drive them out. You find exactly the same word being used, but translated differently in Matthew 23 and verse 34. Matthew 23, verse 34. Jesus says to his disciples, therefore I am sending you prophets and wise men and teachers. Some of them you will kill and crucify, others you will flog in your synagogues and pursue from town to town. So there we are. Pursue from town to town. That's the same word. The word pursue there is the word persecute. And that's what it means. It means to go after someone and to be absolutely determined to get rid of them, to push them out somewhere, to silence someone. And that's what people try to do. Driving them out of town. Well, there are instances of Christians being driven out of town. It is actually going to become more and more common, I think, in our culture for Christians to be refused licenses to do certain things or to be refused the ability to use certain premises. If you have your own building like we do, then there's not a problem. But if you're trying to start a church and you haven't got a building and maybe you want to use one of the public buildings, at the moment, it's reasonable, and if you pay the rent, you'll be able to do it. But you soon find that there are competing interests, and there are churches that find that they've got a regular booking every Sunday for their church service. And then one day, the owners come along, or the organizers, the managers, and they say, well, you can't have your service next Sunday. Well, why not? Well, we've booked a Christmas party, or booked a children's party, and so you can't come. Well, we've got a regular booking. Oh, yeah, but this has come in. And so in subtle ways, Christians will end up being driven out. So it gets worse, doesn't it? You find in countries in Indonesia, for instance, that church buildings get burned. Not only that, but Christians' houses get burned, often with Christians in them. Christians get dragged off to prison under all sorts of laws, particularly their blasphemy laws, but also other laws as well. There are laws in some countries against meeting together in groups of a certain size. And so a church that's any bigger than the little family is deemed to be an illegal gathering. And so they're arrested and taken off to prison. Or they're made to report daily to the police. Or they're put to death. And we read of these things. We know that they're true. And they don't happen in this country to that extent. But they may well do. And there have been times in the past, of course, when they have. How should we respond? Jesus says, rejoice and be glad. Now, if nothing else has seemed odd in these Beatitudes, surely that does. Rejoice and be glad. Surely you might think that the last thing that you will want to do when these sort of things happen to you is to rejoice. You just want to cry. You don't want to rejoice. You want to run away. You want to escape it. Or you want to somehow try to change things so that you will be accepted, because we all love to be accepted. But Jesus says, no. Rejoice and be glad. Be exceedingly glad. Be tremendously glad, says J.B. Phillips when he translates this. And we do have examples in the Bible of that, don't we? Paul and Silas are in prison in Philippi. And what are they doing at midnight? Singing, worshipping God, praying, singing the praises of God whilst they are chained in the prison. And you find that the disciples rejoice after they've been flogged. Very painful. And yet they rejoice that they've been considered worthy of suffering for the name of Christ. Well, we only experience, I think, the more subtle forms of persecution. I did say, and I do believe, that that can be harder at times to bear. Why is it, though, that we don't yet experience the more extreme forms of persecution? I think there's probably two reasons for that. One of the reasons is that our society is still, to a certain extent, affected and shaped by its Christian heritage. So I think the very thought of persecuting Christians in this country physically, putting them in prison, burning their houses and so on, cuts right across the sort of society that has developed in our nation, because it's been shaped by Christian principles. But we do need to be aware that those Christian principles are being undermined all the time. We see it in the laws that have been passed recently concerning marriage. No longer does our country accept the Christian definition of marriage. We still do, but as a whole nation, we don't. And because of that, we can see a shift away from a nation that's been shaped by Christian principle and godliness, and where Christians have been involved in setting up hospitals and education and setting the laws of the land and so on. It's moving far away from that at quite a rapid pace. So I think because we are still largely affected by our Christian heritage, we don't get the harsher forms of persecution, but we certainly get the insults and we certainly get the slander. And you will face that, especially those of you who are at the forefront in places of work. But there's another reason, I think, why we don't end up with the harsher form of persecution. I think that's because the church in our nation is not as active in sharing the faith as we should be. I think we're less than we ought to be. And perhaps we need to come back to these Beatitudes and examine our lives and say, well, Lord, help me in the areas where I'm not like that, where I ought to be more like that. Let's ask a final question. In what ways can this be a blessing? And there are three ways in which this can be a blessing. Because Jesus says, blessed are those who are persecuted. Blessed are you when people insult you and so on. In what ways can this be a blessing? Well, the first way is that it shows that your faith is genuine. Because your faith is being tested. Every time someone insults you, every time someone laughs at you, every time someone accuses you of something that's not true, every time that someone is physically abusive towards you because you're a Christian, it is a testing of your faith. And it proves that your faith is genuine. The prophets had to go through it. Isaiah was sawn in two with a wooden saw. Jeremiah was stoned to death by people in Egypt. The Bible doesn't tell us that, but that's what historical tradition says. Ezekiel certainly was told to go and prophesy somewhere else, get out of town. Moses faced the insults of the people of God, as well as of Egypt. Samuel as well. Elijah and Elisha, they all experienced the insults and sometimes the physical punishments of the world. And it shows that our faith is genuine. Second thing is that our Christian character is refined through persecution. We come to maturity in the faith through suffering. Paul says this in Romans, doesn't he? He says that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance character, and character hope. And hope does not let us be ashamed, because God has poured out his spirit, in his love into our hearts by his spirit whom he has given us. So suffering always produces more things in your life. Again, Billy Graham, when he went to China, he met a remarkable Christian. It's 1992, so China had opened up more. The effects of the Cultural Revolution had passed and so on. But he met a man called Pastor Wang Mingdeo. And he'd been a leader in China in the Christian church since the 1930s. But during the Cultural Revolution, he had been imprisoned. He'd been given a life sentence. And when Billy Graham went to visit him, he found him and his wife living in a tiny third-floor apartment in a side street. And yet this man was one of the most humble and godly men that you would ever find. And his life text was from Revelation. Be faithful even to the point of death, and I will give you the crown of life. You know, a remarkable Christian who had been shaped and molded and matured and humbled by all that he'd been through. And we know men and women like that, don't we? Because that's what suffering does. But then there's another blessing that Jesus tells us here. Great is your reward in heaven. Your reward is in heaven. It's not earned by persecution, but it's given by the grace of God to those who are persecuted. And we will know something of heaven on earth as well when we go through these things. There's a man called Isaac Waston. He was a writer in the 17th century. He wrote a book called The Complete Angler. Not a Christian book. It's a book on fishing. But he knew a man called Richard Sibbes. And he wrote a little ditty about Richard Sibbes. Richard Sibbes was one of the great Christian leaders of the day. Of this blessed man, let this just praise be given. Heaven was in him before he was in heaven. So persecution can do that. It can produce a heavenly godliness in your heart. So don't seek persecution, but don't shrink from it either. Live as Christ shows us here, by the grace of God. Let's live like this. And then when there is a reaction from the world, well, let's be prepared, as Christ has told us, to rejoice and be glad, and to keep our eyes fixed on our heavenly reward, not on this world.